Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, April the 2nd, 2013, and this is hour 180 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with their amazing flowing dialogue. And now we hear from Sharon using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis.
Hello, and welcome back. You've been away for a couple Tuesdays and flew south. You flew almost directly south from Maui.
Yeah, 8,000 kilometers or something like that. About 4,000 miles.
4,000 to New Zealand.
New Zealand, yes. And New Zealand's a nice place, really very nice. I can see many aspects of New Zealand being idealistic in terms of, a nearly perfect society. Having, when it comes down to, I guess, food, perhaps even energy, because they do have coal there. They could, and wind, solar energy. They're working somewhat with hydroelectric energy, having some very good hydroelectric energy. They're pretty much self-sustaining. So they're energy independent somewhat. And they can turn, of course, coal, which they have, into a burnable fuel that could run in ordinary internal combustion engine as liquefied petroleum gas, LPG, or some form of gas too that they have over there. And they also have energy that is generated by geothermal energy. So, because they're on the Ring of Fire, definitely, and they got shook up recently, and twice, big time, and that was down in Christchurch. So in Christchurch, they're showing very much a similar mentality like they're doing in Japan. And since we've got a chance to rebuild essentially a city or society, let's do it right. And they're doing it, trying to get as many heads together and do it as right as they can perhaps think about.
When you say shook up, you have to say
earthquake,
because, yeah. You know, in Maui or in Hawaii, there's a fair amount of earthquakes.
Yeah, and they had thousands of tremors, but as far as a big, major earthquake, and it wasn't extremely, strong. It's just that the one that hit Christchurch was very close to the surface, so it liquefaction, movements, shear, they were all a combination of everything. They had shear movement, lift, liquefaction, tidal surge, everything.
What's liquefaction?
It's when, this doesn't have to be with an earthquake. It's anytime soil, which is relatively stable, becomes liquefied, becomes more like a liquid than a solid. And a lot of times it's due to just the water percolating through. Uh-huh. A lot of times percolating through very quickly.
Wow.
We've had that in Hawaii a lot. Liquefaction in our landslides being generated because of a heavy rain. And down goes the side of a hill because of that. And it does come down in a form of a liquid. Once the slide starts, it flows much like a liquid. Mm-hmm. And the earthquake, liquefaction, the very ground that you built on, that, you built a type of a footing, which, of course, would be much like your shoe standing on ground. And if all of a sudden that ground becomes much like a liquid or mud, very soft, you go sinking into it, And that's exactly what happens with some of the buildings. In fact, some buildings are tilted, remaining tilted, and need to come down. And some buildings look perfectly good, and they need to come down.
Wow.
Yeah.
So under the footing of the building, it just the whole building just sinks?
Yeah, right. Oh. It just sinks, yeah. And they've got a whole stadium over there that's going to come down because the whole field, not only did it sink in liquefaction, there was also something they have a term for, but it's a blast of sand that comes up, much like part of the liquefaction. It becomes when it becomes liquefied, there are pressures that just boil up sand dunes. I mean, a mountain of sand can appear just squished up, pushed up out of the ground in its more liquid form. And next thing you look, no, you got a hill. And that's, of course, very unstable. You can't build. Once they determine these areas, they're not scheduled for anything to be built on. Anything to be built on those sites. But there's some that they're trying to, some old churches that they're trying to decide what to do about, whether they should tear them down or repair them or just leave them as they are. I think they should just leave them as they are as a sign of, you know, one of the things that churches symbolize, I don't care if they're Christian or temples, Islamic temples, Buddhist temples or whatever, they're supposed to, you know, give off this, extrude this strength. But really, when it comes down to that, they shouldn't. It should represent the frailty of humanity and the environment that we live. Because as mortals, we definitely do not live forever. So having perhaps the example of a very old church becoming more like a ruin than a rebuilt structure, good as new, because we dare not encroach on the possibility that we are less than, you know, everlasting, especially in our belief systems. I think that's wrong. I think that we should acknowledge the fact that the true belief systems don't need needs only the reminder that we are indeed, in our present form, as beings of temporary holding of a position in our domain. The domain being, of course, our life experience here in the flesh, in the body. Mm-hmm. And then moving beyond that, one of the reminders that was given to me by the Dano. The Dano, many times in his teaching to me, was observing. He was like watching me learn. And he never intervened in the learning. If I had a question, he'd take me directly to the source of the answer and watch me absorb the answer. And if I was absorbing it to his satisfaction, he never intervened. But the intervention came when he wanted me to absolutely realize how new the New Jerusalem was and how it was maintained as new and actually recycled as new and never lost its newness. Because he said to me, Michael, don't you notice how new this place looks? And I said, yeah, it's really clean and shiny and nice and beautiful. And he says, yes. But when you go back to Earth and you visit Rome, take a look at the same structures there, the ruins of Rome. And I did go to visit Rome, much like how I did visit New Zealand. And in Rome, I remembered him telling me that, and I looked at ruins. But I also noticed so much of the art glorifying humanity. I mean, sculptures, of human beings, I don't care who they are, famous or not so famous, they just were all over the place. And then you went to museums and you see partial ones, broken off heads, broken off arms, beautiful sculptures, great works of art. And there's so many of them that I could mention that have been stolen and taken to other places like England, beautiful works of art that have a lot to do with trying to glorify humanity. But really, it's only our temporary being here. And how we spend our lives that develop the character of newness and everlastingness, which that point was made by the Dino. Look at where you are in the New Jerusalem. This is a small domain in space, made approximately of the age similar to the time of Christ, about 2,000 years old at the time. Maybe its seed form or its base form, maybe it may have been older, but its full growth as it was orbiting and remained in orbit around Saturn, and still is approximately 2,000 years, growing continuously. And the cycle of newness continues, and growth and renewal, and the regeneration chambers are there. And the resurrection chambers perhaps also, but they definitely were pointed out to me. In the case of this continual newness, only they could do that. Only the Dano could point it out to me and make an effort to make that point. And going to look at a devastated area, I did not in Japan, in my visit to Japan, even if it was only a week later after the earthquake and the tsunami hit, see any of the damage. I did experience many miles away about a 6.5 earthquake that shook the building pretty good, and it was deep and quite distant away from where I was. So it still was a little bit scary, but people in Tokyo had already built structures there that were absolutely strong, that were designed to withstand earthquakes. Mm-hmm. So they had no worry that the building was going to fall apart. Not like these ancient buildings or these very old, stone or brick constructed buildings that a little bit of shaking and fall apart. So they had to, these that were down in, Christchurch, were more structured like that. Even some that were supposedly structured for being stronger are now being condemned. One government building only being 1 year old.
Wow.
So at the time, and now.
Government building, wow.
Yeah, 1 year old. Yeah.
1 year old government building. There it goes.
It's still there. It looks perfectly good.
Oh, it does look perfect?
Yeah, but they said to bring it up to where it would be able to stand, truly be a safe building. It would cost just as much as tearing it down and building a new one.
Oh.
So they're just thinking, oh, we've got to tear down this thing, build another one. Yeah, they're all going through all that kind of.
Well, they may have another earthquake right after that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, the earthquakes have gotten stronger recently this month. There's a lot of fives, a lot of them, sixes, all around the Pacific Rim and then moving out all across the planet. So, yeah, even though they're not as numerous, maybe by 10 or 20 less per month, but they're stronger. They're stronger this month. So that's a scary thing. Earthquakes are going to continue to become a problem. but more are us there to look at attitudes, to look at society, look at the human, the true human strength, which is not in our glorification of ourselves in sculpture or art, but the real living and alive character, which is the most precious part of our nature, which is that living part and alive part that is treasured very much by the divine ones who gave us and hope for us to continue progressing toward real light and life. And that is a hope that many, many people have, that we will enter in that age when we're alive and breathing right now. And we'll be definitely, and are definitely, because of such movement in our attitudes and shifts in our consciousness, planetary wise, are moving in that direction. But they, of course, gotta, interestingly, how are the financial institutions gonna work out the way in which these kinds of construction projects or reconstruction projects will be financed on a global scale. So the banking industry definitely cannot remain that same with their debt-based structure. Moving more toward a faith-based structure. If it's worth building, build it. If it's just for profit, maybe that's when it comes under absolute scrutiny. In any case, it's something that we are hoping for. Much of our planet wants peace, definitely, and has no idea where. Those that do know the level of peace, light, and life of planetary maturity, hope to experience it soon. And I'd like to say hello to one I met over there in Auckland, New Zealand, Wendy, who we met over there, who is also very much hoping for that experience of that time and truly becoming an experiencer of an age changing and definitely a contributor to it. So, this new age of light and life that we are looking towards. And as I said, the Danos, the teachers, which are part of it, many times only observe the process of our learning. And that is something that I believe is happening now. There's a lot of observation by the hires. In fact, the Veranda Deck Most Highs are considered observers right now in terms of our planet. And something I mentioned to Wendy there in New Zealand, Auckland, New Zealand, was that our planet is also becoming a very central point in the Archangel Circuit, and the Archangels themselves functioning in a new form of governance, as our planet's diversity and stresses are exposing a real opportunity of evolution in terms of bringing out the greater good in all the universe. The part that we live in, Cisetania, that fallen part of the universe that has been and is being brought. We were the tail end, the baby, the primitive one. We'll become the head because much of where Cetania went and the 600 planets that fell followed a course of development that did not necessarily have the end goal of light and life. They had another goal, a glorification of one Lucifer, and that has been put down. Ultimately, true light and life is the true and only liberty that can be called for. could see others as the financial system is a good example of, produces slavery, even if it may at the first entry point seem like liberty, it ends in enslavement. So anyway, a little bit of what I experienced in New Zealand, where it contacts or connects with some of my experience. And even I talk about a little bit more about some of the legends there. And those with oral histories spoken from one group through the ages, through the generations of times, have been synthesized and simplified. And we have a southern culture and a northern culture, two main islands, one North Island, South Island. And the South Island had an interesting story of how a father of these two sons went to Earth, and he remarried a Earth woman. And the sons wanted to find their father, and they went over New Zealand. And they said that this is where he fell to, he went to. And what they talk about these sons being, they were in this ship, but it was a canoe, but not really a canoe. It's all in space canoe. Anyway, this is the way, interestingly, the guy who was explaining it to me wasn't afraid to say that they were out in space looking down. So, okay, a space canoe. And looking for their father, who had taken an earthly mother. Now, that's something written in the Bible, and talking about how the sons of God saw the daughters of men, and they were fair, and they liked them, and they said, oh, let's go down and have kids with them. So that's exactly what happened. But these two brothers decided to come down and look for their father. Well, anyway, they went down and they struck a reef. Well, actually, they broke down. They tried to get their space canoe working again, but it couldn't. So they ended up stuck. Interestingly, it sort of matches all of that. And
shipwreck,
yes, exactly. And they were giants. Wow. So giants, they were, in their lore, became as high as mountains. In fact, when they died, they became mountains. But really, these men, and I tell you right now, I took a picture of myself with a sculpture down in Auckland. This Auckland sculpture showed a Maori native appearance. And I said that those that walked with the Dino at first were about 8 or 9 feet tall. Mm-hmm. And I took a picture of myself next to the sculpture in Auckland. Oh. And he was about 8 or 9 feet tall. Big guy. And it really was talking about the kind of cape he had. And interestingly, those individuals, these tall ones, they were, by Riley Martin, described as Neptunians from a water-based planet, ocean-based planet. And they had, in my opinion, they had Polynesian faces. And it's a little different. There's a difference because Polynesians are closely aligned with the Caucasians. In fact, some Polynesians, Hawaiians included, have blue eyes. They have no crossbreeding with Caucasians from outside. It must have been extremely long, a long time ago when they were at one time connected. Anyway, the South Island was also, by Wendy, she mentioned that many of these of the tribe of the South Island had blue eyes. But again, when you look at them, they have blue eyes, yes, but their face is just Polynesian. They have their flat, wider, broader noses, sometimes a thinner face, but thicker lips, dark complexion. And this is exactly what I saw. And these guys had long hair, but interestingly enough, they wore capes. These are the ones that were walking with the Dana.
You said they wore what, capes?
Capes, yeah.
A cape?
Cape, yeah. A big fluffy cape in the back. I don't know what they were covering up, but they had...
What was that for?
I don't know. Maybe he covered their wings. Who knows? I don't know.
Okay. All right, but they had capes.
They had capes, yeah. Made them look like important, you know. Especially kind of always surrounding the Dano.
And these were the Nymtonians?
I don't know what they're called exactly. This is what Riley called them, as Neptunians.
Yeah, the guys with the big feet?
Yeah, with big feet. Definitely had big feet.
And, yeah, the water people.
Yeah. Duke Hanamoku, the Olympian from Hawaii, back in the days of Johnny Weissmuller.
Oh, yeah. I was in Johnny Weissmuller's swimming pool cottage thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. over on Diamond Head.
Yeah, Johnny Weissmuller was the old Tarzan from the old days, the 1930s or whatever,
yeah,
movies,
right.
Tarzan, yeah. And he swam also at the Olympics, but Duke Hanamoku swam, and his feet were like fins. They were so big and wide.
Oh.
And in Hawaii, we called them luau feet.
Luau
feet, meaning the size of a taro leaf. Oh. The taro leaf is very, very broad and big. Luau. And by the way, just as a side note, there are some cultures in Hawaii that believe they have come from the taro plant itself.
Oh.
But you can see the mistake in their learning in that. The oral history was passed talking about the origins and the branches of the different lines of tribes and peoples coming from a central origin. So it was mistaken in their oral history to say that they were actually coming from the taro plant itself, but were the explanation of how the different tribes all come back to the same root. We are all brothers. That was tried to be taught to them by the wiser ones, the ones of wisdom who were taught by the higher ones, the teachers. And that ended up becoming a little distorted. And that's why with these types of oral histories, I try to look past them and look into the fact that there were schools set up in early days to elevate our planet. And they were sent back after being educated back to their own people. Some of them were impregnated as far as girls and had a new genetic line installed, which became royalty. And others took back with them science and technologies, a lot of it agriculture, and some metaworking back into the different, to move us away. But then many actually reverted back into where they were, but of keeping some of the knowledge and the learning, including some of the stories. That's why it was interesting. Yeah. Also, another interesting point I have over there, as far as New Zealand's experience was to be in New Zealand and going to an area called Queenstown. And actually it's a little town, more touristy, kind of famous for the bungee jumping, which was invented in New Zealand, in Queenstown, very close to Queenstown, on a very historic old bridge that crossed some kind of gold mining territory. By the way, 4,500 tons of gold was taken out of that area. That's wow. A lot of gold. Yeah, 4,500 tons.
Wow, out of Queensland?
Out of Queenstown. A very, yeah. And it paid off all the debt of New Zealand.
I bet it did.
So they had their own gold rush. There was gold rush everywhere. But
they're probably still finding gold there if there were 4,500 tons.
Yeah, there's some people. I observed one guy with a four-wheel drive, SUV vehicle down on, close to the river. He had a little siphon dredge, to kind of siphon up the dirt. And then he was according to the guide who's always lived, born and raised in that area, said he's on the wrong side of the river. Should have been on the other side. There's more gold on the other side, but there are guys actually mining gold over there. But what I had observed over there was this little, I guess you call it, it's a beautiful lake. Lake Wakatipu. And Lake Wakatipu has a tide of all things. And I got to observe. I said, I'd like to see that tide. And it just so happens. It happens every 20 minutes or so, about there, regularly. And they said they measured it about 6 inches, but I was able to see it actually make a wet spot from the highest point of the wet spot to where the lower part was nearly 2 feet difference, because it had pushed some of the wind waves with a tidal push. And we in Hawaii, who surf a lot, we know a lot about tidal push. It just pushes the waves and it makes them bigger. And that tidal push did make a wind wave hit and peak together, and they were closely bunched together, and it pushed the waves together, and it made one that came in and pushed way up really high. And I said, there definitely is a tide here. And scientists have come up with lame ideas on why the tide is. They said, it's a oscillation in the atmospheric pressure. Oh, give me a break. If it had that much energy, I'd hear my ears pop, And there's also one that they said, it's got an opening out into the main sea channels that are out there in the Pacific, and their tidal movement. But the tidal movements in the oceans are controlled by the influences of the gravitational or electrogravitational forces of the moon, and its regularity is not 20 minutes,
But 20 minutes, that really throws everything off.
Yeah, but the oral history is the most plausible in my estimate, because what they said was there was a big giant, and he died and he fell down in there, but he's really not dead and his heart is beating. But if you look between the lines and thought between the lines, and they said, the giant is the planet. In fact, the giant is where the ground used to walk the ground and then fell down and became down into the ground. His heart is still beating. Well, that makes sense, because if we are being explained from a higher consciousness, someone teaching us, trying to explain it to little kids who have no idea about the fact that the planet is not solid. It's got a core in it. We have the regular cycles that are happening within the core, within the magma. We have various uplifting cycles that happen quite regularly. Some of our geysers are able to be timed. You can almost set your watches by Old Faithful as a geyser.
Yes.
And these are types of energetic pushes that happen internally in our planet. And this is something more plausible in my understanding, especially in a functioning island or continent, actually more of an island that is right on the Ring of Fire, where there's a lot of activity and movement, tectonic movement, an expansionary movement, a stretch movement going on that could generate that type of regular pulse. So anyway, I think the native people in their oral history try to simplify a truth. And that's why I look into oral histories as a source of confirmation of all things, of the fact that there were celestials here, many times the very same ones that I met, trying to uplift our planet. Those that are in the New Jerusalem are, of course, of the legitimate organized as well as super civilized celestial beings that are had a lot to do with the early education, some of which fell by the wayside, went wrong. Those that I'm learning from, the Danos themselves, they have a legacy back some time, many thousands of years ago. And of course, the Urantia book does give indication of a time when the schools were operational. And in Turkey, of course, there's this old area. What was it called? Forgot the name of it, of all things. It's been discovered pretty recently. And it's probably one of the relics of an old age, much older than the pyramids, of the school environment. So that's a little bit of my take on visit to New Zealand, what I got out of it in terms of looking at it. And besides having the fun of looking around, the place is a beautiful, beautiful culture, beautiful island. And island nation of about 4 million people, I think it was. It's not very dense, densely populated. You know.
That tide that you saw every 20 minutes, was that a lake, or what size amount of water was that? What size?
The lake, Lake Wakatipu.
Lake Wakatipu.
Lake Wakatipu next to Queenstown would be considered, by our standards, a small lake, by the standards that we have in terms of the United States, because we got the Great Lakes.
Yeah, we have huge lakes.
Yeah, the Great Lakes are like oceans. But it's definitely...
Could you see across this lake?
Definitely could see across. So crossing it would be less than a mile, I think.
So it's a mile wide, and how long is it?
I don't know, but I would guess perhaps it forms like the shape of a lightning bolt, you know, or a stretched out Z,
you know.
And so its length is sort of in a Z shape.
Because 20 minutes is such a short amount of time. So 20 minutes for it to fall and 20 minutes for it to rise?
I think so, yeah. It was pretty fast. I watched that go down. I actually could see it with my eyes dropping. I saw it. I could feel it coming back. I wasn't sure.
Wow.
So, you know, I wanted to see it, but I... You know, with the celestials, they have a way of moving me around into the right place at the right time to get me, you know, and this is, there's so many things that I get communicated. It's not words. No, so many times it's not words. It's movement. It's directive movement. It's feeling. Someone was calling me, and I did not have my cell phones with me. And where my cell phone is, I usually carry it. I felt the vibrations of, you know, like, you know, put it on vibrate. And I get this, and this happens to me all the time. I get the vibration feeling, or I get, oh, someone's calling you, oh, somebody's, oh, some, and this always happens. And in Queenstown, where I wanted to experience the high tide, I got this movement to this, walk to the wall, get into a position so I could see the, okay, now I'm here, okay, what you want? Oh, so it's very interesting. The water is getting really rough all of a sudden. I wonder why. And then I saw the tide hit.
Did you feel this was like an underground tube, like a volcano tube?
I don't think
a lava tube.
Well, there seemed to have been a push, you know, because of a channel. Because where I was located in Queenstown was inside of a bay, tiny bay.
Bay.
Yeah. And that bay has some piers in it. So what could be generated outside in the open lake, the grander open lake, would be focused in into this smaller tongue that reaches in, or a bay, and push, have a greater effect on the tidal push. So I was able to see it much better. And then, of course, I believe, okay, I believe if I really do, there is a tide in this lake. Yeah.
And that's what they called it. They didn't call it something else, just the water is going, coming up and down.
Well, they call it a tide.
They called it a tide.
Yes, according to them, there's another lake. I forgot. It's in the United States someplace with a tide. Besides Lake Okatipu. But what I got most out of it was the oral legend of it being the most plausible against our scientists' explanation. And basically, when they come right down to the scientists, most of them say, I don't know. I don't know why. Yeah. There is, according to legend, a living being down there, which is our planet. Our planet is not dead. It's alive, moving around. It has a pulse to it. And we know, of course, by watching visible, regular pulses, such as Old Faithful as a geyser, in a very volcanically active area, we can have very regular cycles like that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially underwater, I can have something that kind of like, you know, burps like that or whatever. It doesn't even burp, it sort of pushes water tidally on a regular.
Well, something's doing it, mm-hmm. and it's amazing that they haven't figured out what it is.
Mm-hmm. There are many engines that we use that principle. I forgot one of them that tends to use a principle of that type, similar to that, is able to actually push water uphill, but that's a different. It actually, you know, focuses in water pressure movement, but this one sort of like regularly must boil up, expand, cool down, get small again, boil up, expand, cool down, and then starts all over again. So this may be the cycle, the living cycle that was put into their mind. And of course, some people would want to say that, oh, these natives, they come up with these primitive ideas, but they got actually a lot of real experience and knowledge. If you can just synthesize through maybe sometimes just the simplicity and sometimes the overlay of culture, their own culture, on this. Just to say that these celestials who were looking for their father and they ended up as giants, because one brother was bigger than the other brother, and he ends up as a bigger mountain than the other brother. The idea was they were giants. And definitely some of the genetics in human beings is laying evidence in our anthropology, in our, as showing evidence that there were giants, many giants.
So they think there's a giant at the bottom of this lake. That's one of the ideas they had, you said.
That was the way to simplify and then put it through lore. And then I can have their explanation, because I'm sure they might have had a question of why that happened. And then the answer was given to them, and it was passed down through generation upon generation for thousands of years. 4,000 years at least.
Mm-hmm. And this is the land of 1,000 waterfalls.
Ah, that's a little bit further down the road.
Oh.
Yeah, so if you go down to on the way to Milford Sound, there's if you're lucky, which I was, blessed, definitely blessed, went over there and was at to see those thousands of waterfalls. Just, I mean, Hawaii's got waterfalls galore.
Hawaii certainly does too.
Yeah, but not that many. I mean, oh my goodness. Hawaii, we got waterfalls all over the place.
How many bridges are there between Wailuku and Hana?
Oh, I don't know. There's like,
100, isn't there?
It's something like that.
It's a huge amount of bridges, and every one is water going under it.
Right.
Coming off of Haleakala. So there's like waterfalls, 100 waterfalls on the way to Hana.
Yeah, and you know they're harder to see because of growth, but because of the fact that on the way to Milford Sound, much of the valley that we drove through was, you know, basically carved out by glaciers. It's down to stone, so the growth of the trees around there doesn't go up the walls, the sides of the cavern. They are basically rock. Sheer face or rounded off rock. So we have waterfalls of all kinds. Some waterfalls that have a straight fall, others that have a tumbling fall over a rounded slope. Mm-hmm. And just.
And you found it to be beautiful, even knowing what Hawaii is like.
A very different appearance. You know, we're looking at tropical forest versus looking at in Hawaii versus temperate rainforest or just sheer rock face, you know, because there's no dirt left carved away by the glaciers. Interestingly, I was pointing out was that the rock faces that are there have a kind of face like a person. Or there was one in a valley that they have a, you know, different names for. One was interesting. It wasn't a person, it was a gorilla. And it did look like a gorilla. And it was not toward Milford Sound, it was more by the gold mining area. But anyway, there's all kinds of rock formations, which are very interesting. Because of the fact that there was very, very aggressive glaciation. We have on Maui evidence of a terminal moraine where the glacier started on the slopes on the top of Haleakala, went down partway and terminated before it reached sea level. So that terminal moraine is still there. There were glaciers here in Maui, but in Hawaii, but not to the level where it just literally bulldozed down. There's much more aggressive glaciers that just literally carved out fjords and valleys and sculpted rock. Well, anyway, that's just one of the things. How much more time do we have?
About 9 minutes to the hour.
Oh, okay. One of the things that I was being directed to was also the fact that recognition, you know, I always talked about looking at these rock faces and looking like, wow, you see a face of a woman there, or a face of a gorilla there. This, we just passed Easter. It's kind of a celebration. It's an important fact that Jesus Christ, a human being, Jesus Christ, you were able to kill him, physically kill him, but we're not able to destroy him. He did allow that to happen in a natural sense, and fully experience human suffering and human death, mortal suffering and mortal death. But in the resurrection, it's very different from the technology of the resurrection chamber. The resurrection chamber is a technology of consciousness that is moved into a morancho or higher level material body. And what happened with Christ was he literally did it all by himself. There was no technology involved, no outer technologies that enveloped his body to create that resurrection process. What did happen was, of course, his removal of his physical body, which left an impression on his shroud, which is now famous as the Shroud of Turin. Another thing that is important, which was in the very early part of my walk in this enlightened mode, was to be challenged after 40 days of a type of fast and continuous type of prayer or communication with the celestial environment, was to receive an interview by an individual who every individual sentient being must pass. Absolutely everyone must pass the recognition of the Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord Christ Michael, the creator of the universe, the creator of the universe of Nebula. This is an absolute must be. And it can happen in our physical life here or in a projected extended life in the mansion worlds, or even if we were resurrected, perhaps even in a New Jerusalem. This is an important thing that I would like to share, was that when you work with any of the celestials, if you ever come up against one that knows you much better than you know yourself. That's one of the indicators that you are not talking to a low celestial being. Anyone who knows you better than yourself is a high celestial. And such was one of the evidences that allowed me to recognize him. In this interview, that the being I was talking with was in fact the universe creator. And every one of us will be challenged to that. And it will not be a challenge that is easily passed, because he will never come to us in a way that we'll easily recognize him as. Oh, I just recognize him as even as the disciples of Christ. They looked at him straight on, didn't recognize him because he looked different. And yet they recognized him because they recognize his personality. They recognize the reflection of themselves in him. And they also reflected him back to Christ. And then this recognition takes place. It's part of a type of higher lift that is exceptionally important to accomplish. And he'll give you a chance, as he gave me. And in an interview, you get asked questions. When I was asked the question, he immediately knew the answer as he asked it, because as I absorbed the question, I was answering it. And I tell you one thing, when your answer comes out of your mouth, or you physically manifest your answer one way or another, your answer has already been spoken by your inner man, your divine son, the Father fractal. It's already spoken. So you better have it truthful, or at least fumble at it truthfully. And the last part was the final declaration of test, when I was absolutely at the threshold of recognition, or I had already passed that point of recognition. I was asked, who was that you were speaking to? And I said, that is the Lord Jesus Christ, the universe creator, my Lord and my Savior. Because he had turned his back on me after his interview and was walking away. And I finally answered that. He turned about and proclaimed a success. His proclamation was that his face was fully illuminated and lit up in a bright smile. And his eyes were wide open. And his hands were raised up in this up high. And he walked backwards. He didn't turn his back ever again until the experience was terminated. And it was so much like how, like how the curtains close, similar to that. He walked back, and these purple veils, like heavy, beautiful curtains, closed. And this is my experience on the recognition test of the universe creator that every single person must pass. And inevitably you will, but it is one that you gain only because you've walked with, as the disciples themselves walked with. And even if you don't pass it in this life, you'll be given a chance to gain knowledge to pass it in another, more extended, perhaps morancho life that is beyond the mortal flesh. But it's best to try to pass it while we're here in the body, because it causes us to gain much greater experience, much greater blessing, because it will be in the light of life. And you'll be walking in that position like having a bubble of the light and life of planetary life about you. And this is much of how it will become, because you know, when you see, oh, these UFOs are coming around and they're peeking at us, or what are they doing, you know? Well, that's exactly what they're doing. They're visiting, they're peeking at us, they're having a kick out of us sometimes. But actually, they are peering from a position of light and life. And in that position of light and life, they're watching. When we pass the law of recognition, the one which recognizes the universe creator, Christ Michael, Joshua ben Joseph, the thousands upon thousands of different names you can give him, and you recognize him as such, and he also acknowledges your recognition of him as correct, you will now be looking into a planet, even though imperfect, from a position of light and life. So you're be held in a kind of little balloon of light and life, and hopefully being able to share it and expand it and allow more people to desire it. This way the planet in its entirety gets elevated. So that little bubble of light and life that surrounds you connects with others, making a much bigger bubble of light and life until the entire planet is surrounded with it. At that point, there isn't any more terrible confusion and loss of life and war and all of those things.
Wow, that's beautiful.
That's my final point in the sense of what this last resurrection, Easter, has a little point of the fact that we, in terms of our adoption process, experientially working in a universe, and our zone in the universe, right now in Satania, fallen planets, even fallen civilizations, much like an earthquake hit them, and they got to rebuild it right. We actually are given a chance to try to do it right. Before it becomes too big and unstoppable.
Wow. So that's Easter.
A little bit of Easter.
A little bit of Easter.
Yeah. From a perspective that's a little bit different. Yeah, because we look and we hope, and most of the Christianity has hopes after the resurrection. If there be, Paul the Apostle said, if there be no resurrection, there is no hope. There is no need for faith. But I say, on top of those words, if there be no heaven, there can be no resurrection. Because where do you go? To more turmoil? That's exactly what happened with Satania. And Satania is still having to look, and of all things, look to this planet, try to figure it out. Because we who are mortal gain divinity and much of it here on our planet through, first of all, experiential submission, recognition, and moving on to the expansion to trinitization. We literally can become trinitized here. And there are other mortals too, sun-seized, who, like the thief on the cross, who said to Christ, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Christ said, this day you shall be with me in paradise. What that meant was, by my selection, I seize you and take you with me to paradise, because you've said the perfect words. And that is a little bit of additional information. When the Dano wanted to take me so I could receive the answer of the purpose of human life, the purpose of all life, I pointed primarily back to Earth. He wanted me to walk in front of him. He said, walk in front of me. Walk before me. And I did, back and forth, back and forth, until he said, now you have been made perfect. You are perfect. Come with me to receive the answer. So I had to stand up and, I had to climb onto his stage. He was above, a little bit higher. So let's take a couple steps up. And then entered in to his envelope of light, literal light, and went to receive the answer that it was to ascend to be a full spirit, spiritual being, like the Veranda deck who gave me the answer. Very high, faithful, absolutely flawless being of light. So this is a bit of my Easter message.
Simply beautiful to hear. Something about Easter I've never heard or experienced before. That is, that's really nice for you to give us, give that to all of us, Michael. Thank you. I guess we'll close and say aloha and talk with you again next week. And while you were gone, I received some things from different people, and Paul J.S., he wanted to ask about the seed, which I've always been interested in, but we'll get to that some other time.
Yes.
And thank you so much. So we'll do this again next Tuesday.
Okay.
Okay. Aloha, Michael. Bye.
Bye.